and welcome to the latest Science Support Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Jen Case. So Jen holds a PhD in sport nutrition and performance, whilst also being a registered dietitian and a strength and conditioning specialist. Next to that, Jen also holds 11 World Championship Masters titles for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and that makes Jen the perfect person today to discuss how you can cut for combat sport performance. So without further ado, it's time to welcome Jen onto the show. So Jen, welcome to the Science of Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. So can you give us a quick introduction as to who you are and what you've been up to until now?
So I am Dr. Jennifer Case, I'm part of Renaissance Periodization. My PhD is in nutrition and human performance. I'm also a registered dietitian, and I have a certified specialist sports dietetics standing as well. And then on the athletic side, I'm a jiu-jitsu athlete, have been for over 20 years, won worlds many, many times, won Pan Ams, North American Masters, all that fun stuff. This year, I'm trying something a little different and doing the ADCC tournaments, which are no-gi. In the past, everything I've done, except for MMA, of course, was gi. So stepping out of my comfort zone this year and just trying a little something different.
Absolutely excellent. How do you find the time to do all of that? Because that's a lot of, that's a big long list of stuff, right? Like, I'm kind of jealous of like the people who just come, oh, I do this and this, I'm a dietitian. I'm like, whoa, how do you do all of those things? Like, have you got any tips for those listening to, in terms of like time management?
Yeah, a lot of it is scheduling. Like, I've got my entire training camp all the way up to trials, which is just over a month away. Got that all planned out. So a lot of it is planning out ahead of time. I am lucky that my job is completely online, so I have a lot of flexibility there in terms of scheduling when I train and when I work with my clients. And I also, my children only have fur, so that frees up a lot of time as well.
Makes it a little bit easier. Not saying it's less demanding, but yeah, they at least can go outside and walk themselves and don't scream as much probably. So in terms of then, we have to discuss cutting for mm-hmm. combat sport, right? So before we get into all of the how you do it, how you do it safely, that kind of stuff, but why do athletes cut in the first place anyway? What's the idea behind that?
So the idea is that they think that if they cut down to a lighter weight class, then they're going to be stronger than their opponent. That's problematic, though, because everybody's cutting weight. And depending on how much they cut, they could actually be decreasing their strength performance.
So the idea is they could potentially live, I don't know, let's keep the numbers nice and easy. They could live at maybe 100 kilos, just mm-hmm. above 100 kilos, and they could move down into that weight category and maintain some of that strength, which they had at the higher weight, but then compete in a slightly easier category. Although it's not easier because everyone's doing the same thing.
Yeah. The quotes on easy, I think, is very relevant there because a lot of the athletes I work with, I recommend very small weight cuts, if any weight cut at all, because the risk of decreasing your strength and your cognitive ability, your reaction time, all those things are very problematic. And if you're able to physically, like if you don't feel like you're being manhandled in the heavier weight class, there's no reason to move down.
So what, like you mentioned, obviously it makes it quote unquote easier, but what are the other advantages to doing it? Otherwise, you wouldn't recommend even a small one, right? So what are the big plus points to doing this in terms of physiology and performance?
Another big one is that there's actually a cap, right? So if you're like right on the cusp between being ultra heavy and heavy, then I would recommend going down to heavy every time. Because when you enter those open-ended weight classes, your opponent could have 100 pounds on you, easy. So if it's one of those where it's like you're on the cusp, then I'd recommend the weight cut so that they're not crazy amount heavier than you. That's really about the only time. If you're on the cusp, that's about the only time I'm going to recommend a weight cut. The rest of the time, I'm going to tell you just go in there at your natural weight and compete to the highest ability that you can.
So that's a really interesting viewpoint on it as well, because I know historically you've got people like, I don't know, boxers or whatever, like sweating everything out with like latex suits on, the whole thing in saunas. And you're like, okay, well, what are then the disadvantages to this? Because clearly there are some as well. You're putting your body through a lot of stress. So other than the fact that it's stress on your body, like what are the key disadvantages to them?
So the stress on your body is a big one. Especially with the 24-hour weight cuts, that's where people are cutting. You know, I don't recommend going over 7% of your body body weight if you're doing a 24 hour. But some of these individuals are cutting well over 10% of their body weight in water right before they compete. And that's going to decrease their performance overall, their strength performance, aerobic capacity, everything like that. And it's going to put them at a greater risk for injury because their joints are so dehydrated. So their risk of tearing an ACL, you know, blowing out their ankle, all of these injury risk factors increase significantly. And their performance is so low, they can't even win at that weight class. So it's kind of, what's the point?
Yeah. And do the sports not try and stop this a little bit as well? Is there not like, I don't know, some, like, I know in judo, for example, you have to weigh in like the day before and you can only lose so much before the day itself, and they have like random testing. So how does that work?
So some of the smaller sports, I shouldn't say smaller, the sports that are not televised, they are taking steps to try and keep the athletes safe. You know, with wrestling, they monitor them throughout the season with the urine specific gravity. With jiu-jitsu, a lot of the competitions now have mat side weigh-ins. So you literally weigh in and then go immediately to your match. So you don't have time to cut. But then ADCC, of course, still keeps the 24-hour weigh-ins. But with that, and same with the UFC. The UFC is never going to get rid of their 24-hour weigh-ins because it's a money-making deal. They can make money with the sponsors the night of the weigh-ins, and then they're going to make more money the night of the show. And you're going to see that with your boxing, with your all your amateur shows. ADCC is doing the same thing because that weigh-in night, that's a chance for sponsorships and making money. So until that goes away, weight cutting is not going to go away.
So, like, there's obviously the physiology, which is kind of important to consider, mm-hmm. and the potential disadvantages. But there's also the money side of it, where, yeah, if you're getting paid to fight, then all of a sudden you want to be doing that weigh-in beforehand because, they're going to give you X amount more than they would be if you were doing a non-televised or maybe less well-viewed sport, for example.
Yeah, that's the big thing there. That's why the weigh-ins are going to stay 24 hours before.
Okay, so when you do have that weigh-in, right, like mm-hmm. you could cut towards the weigh-in as well, mm-hmm. and you can cut after the weigh-in. So you'd then take in as much as possible to try and build yourself back up again. So what does the cut towards the weigh-in look like in terms of methods used and the science behind that?
So the way, if I have an athlete that is wanting to cut, the way that I will work with them is we're actually going to start pretty much a week before the weigh-ins, because what we're going to be doing is we're going to water load them. So we're going to really ramp up the amount of water they consume, going to up it to about 150% of what they normally consume. And by doing that, you increase urine production. And then you continue that for about 4 to 5 days. So they really got their urine production ramp way up. And then about 48 to 36 hours before weigh-ins, I say cut off, but you're still going to have some sips of water and whatnot, but you're going to cut off that high amount of water intake, and the urine production is going to stay elevated. So they're going to excrete out all the fluid they've been drinking plus additional fluid that's normally inside the body. And by doing that, you can really cut a large amount of water weight safely, because once you weigh in, you hopefully, if it's not a mat side weigh in, if it's 4 to 6 hours or even 24 hours, then you've got time to rehydrate before you go out there and compete. So that's probably, that's one of the main ways that I'll help an athlete with water cutting or weight cutting. With a 24-hour weigh-in, you do have the opportunity to manipulate carbohydrates. And the reason why that's important is because for each molecule of carbohydrates that you store, you also store 2 to 3 molecules of water. So it's more water weight that you can cut. So and that one's going to be much tighter. I'm not going to cut carbs a week out. I'm going to cut carbs basically 24 hours beforehand, so that we completely deplete their glycogen stores and they go in just as low on water as possible. And then you need to replenish those glycogen stores before it's time to compete. And I only recommend doing that if they've got 24 hours, because it takes 24 hours to refill your glycogen stores. You can't replenish those like you can water. Water can be replenished very rapidly, but because you got to go through glycogen synthase and all of that, it takes so much longer. Your body needs time for that to occur.
So you've got the option to kind of load up really heavy on water and then mm-hmm. basically weigh it all out again. You can then manipulate carbohydrates a little bit in there. Are there mm-hmm. any other methods which athletes use to then reduce water weight? Let's say you've got those two and you're like, you're really struggling for that last kilo or something. Is there anything else that they can do to really push it?
So I will recommend, if they've got, you know, say they're maybe just like a half pound over, put on sweats and do a light walk. All right. Reason why I recommend that is because your internal temperature is going to increase a little bit, and that's going to create the sweating and everything, but it's a very light walk, so it's not going to be taxing on the body. A lot of people will say, oh, I'm going to jump in the sauna. The problem with jumping in a sauna is that it's been repeatedly shown that that systemic application of heat from an external source decreases power output for up to 24 to 48 hours post-application. So if you got a 24-hour weigh-in, you hop in the sauna, by the time you step on the performance arena, whatever it may be, your force production may still be depleted from that sauna session. So that's why I recommend walking in sweats as opposed to jumping in the sauna or the hot bath. A lot of athletes will do the Epsom salt bath and then wrap up in a towel. Again, that's applying that systemic heat, which could decrease their force production.
I think that's some really interesting advice there, especially on the not doing stuff, because it sounds obvious sometimes. You're like, all right, well, I need to do everything possible. Well, actually, maybe that could be detrimental to performance as well. I mean, let's say you've cut and that's all gone quite well. What are the things that you're going to do to replenish? So you've got that build up the days beforehand that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You've cut, you've got a nail on the head, perfect. 24 hours to go. Let's go. What are we doing?
So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to start rehydrating. You don't want to like slam a gallon of water because that's going to put you in a state of hyponatremia, which is a whole other issue. In general, just to make the math simple, I tell people 8 to 10 fluid ounces every 20 minutes, basically 10 ounces every 20 minutes.
What's that in milliliters? I'm trying to convert for the Europeans amongst us.
I have a conversion chart. I don't know.
That's good. The people are listening, you just gotta have to look at it on the phone. It's fine.
Yeah. You got an app on your phone, I'm sure. But that goes along with what the ACSM recommends in terms of rehydration rate, because you don't want to rehydrate too quickly. So about 10 ounces or whatever that converts to in milliliters every 20 minutes. And you don't want to do just water. You want to put in, I either tell people to water down some Gatorade. So you can take Gatorade and do it like one part Gatorade, three parts water. You can do Pedialyte. You can do just plain salt. If an athlete has got a really sensitive stomach and doesn't want to do a lot of flavoring and stuff, I haven't put the salt in. And the whole thing there is, again, you're trying to prevent that hyponatremia because they're going to be putting in a lot of fluid. They're going to start to urinate it out. I recommend that they replenish 150% of what they lost. So that's why we put in the carbohydrate and the electrolytes so that they're taking those in because they're going to excrete some of them out, but you don't want to get to that point where you're in that state of hyponatremia. If it's 24 hour weigh-in where you've really depleted yourself, I'm going to have them add a little bit of whey protein to that as well. And so it'd be like 5-6 parts watered down Gatorade, one part protein. And again, that's just sip on that because you're trying to replenish things as fast as you can, but you don't want to do it too rapidly. If you were to weigh in and then be like, okay, I'm going to pound this bag of Skittles and go eat whatever, you're going to upset your stomach and that's going to hinder the performance the next day. But if you focus on rehydrating, eat a little something, eat, you know, a small, you know, 2 or 3 ounces of food, just a little something, get in your stomach, a couple hours later, eat 2 or 3, 4 ounces more, right? And every couple hours, you start increasing the volume of solid food that you're taking in, then you're going to be able to replenish your carbs that way without causing that gastric distress for when it's time to perform.
Absolutely excellent. And then let's say you're there on the morning of the event, right? So you've had those little boosts. Mm-hmm. You're in the morning of the event, and now you're like, right, we can go now. So what's breakfast looking like?
So let's assume you're competing in the evening. Say it's a boxing or a MMA event. So you're not going to be competing until probably 9 p.m. So in the morning, you're going to be eating normal lean proteins and your carbohydrates. Your lean proteins, that's really going to be determinant on the size of your athlete. So if it's a small female, it may only be, you know, 18 grams worth of protein. If it's a large male, it may be as high as 40, 45. For carbohydrates, our small females, 60 grams worth of carbohydrates. Our large males may be as high as 200. So it's going to really vary depending on the size of your athlete. And you're going to want to try and have at least 3 meals before you get to the arena. Once the athlete gets to the arena, then it's going to be dependent upon what their stomach can handle. Because I'm still going to be recommending they eat again while they're there, because they get there, day of, you still have medicals, you have rules meetings, you got to sit around if you got to do any kind of media stuff. So they're going to sit around for 2 or 3 hours before they even get in the ring. So they still need to eat again. That meal may just be a protein shake and either like a breakfast bar, granola bar, Pop-Tarts, a very small concentrated form of carbohydrates, because that's when the butterflies are kicking in. And we don't want a lot of volume in their stomach because, you know, most athletes don't even want to eat. And it's like, you've got to eat. You've got to keep those glycogen stores up so that when you go out to the form, you've got the energy you need.
Absolutely excellent. So I'm interested to hear how you've done this in a practical sense. So you've kind of dripped in loads of practical information, Marsha, mm-hmm. there. But can you walk us through, yeah, what either you do as an athlete or what you do for some of the people you work with in terms of that whole process with examples mm-hmm. as to how that works?
So for myself, the way that jiu-jitsu works is we have the mat side weigh-ins. So not a lot of glycogen cutting, but there's a lot of water cutting that can still be done, especially because once you do your mat side weigh-in, you still go to the bullpen for 20, 30 minutes, depending on how, you know, on time your mat is. For competition day, if you look inside my gear bag, I've got Gatorade. I got these little like salad dressing containers that I put my Gatorade powder in. And I have one of those for each bracket I'm registered in and another one of those to consume immediately after my bracket, because I need to, once I'm done competing, I need to start replenishing my glycogen to get ready for the next round of competing that's going to happen a few hours later. For food, I've got my protein bars and then I've got the Belvita breakfast bars. That's kind of my favorite thing right now because it's 45 grams of carbs in less than 2 ounces of food. So very, very small amount of food to sit in my stomach. And then I'll also go by Subway and I will get a turkey sandwich that's literally just turkey and bread. And I put those in my bag because you never know if the tournament's going to be delayed. Like I competed in Atlantic City and I did not compete until midnight. I was scheduled to go at 5 p.m. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're 40 years old and someone is asking you to be active at midnight, that was rough. Yeah. That was the hardest part.
Just being awake at that time of day.
Yeah, it was rough because I was sitting there. I'm like, are we gonna do this? It's my bedtime was 2 hours ago. So
I can imagine. Do you then use things like caffeine as well? Because I imagine you kind of, if you're gonna plan that, then
yes,
you plan it for 5 o'clock or whatever, and then you're like, right, caffeine dip, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I gotta go again at 12. Like that's mad.
Yeah. So I do keep caffeine pills in my bag because that's the easiest way to measure it out. I know other people like coffee, Monster, things like that, but there could be some variation in there. And also you have the volume of fluid. For me, I'm really an anxious individual. So I try to keep the volume in my stomach as low as possible. So I can do that 60, because they make caffeine pills in 60 milligrams, 100 or 200. So it's really easy to make sure you've got the exact amount that you want. And so like, if I know I'm going to be competing within an hour, it'll be one of those 60 milligram ones, which is basically like 2 cups of coffee. If I've done my 5 p.m. match and they're telling me I'm not going again till midnight, then I'll consume one of the 200 milligrams because I've got to be up for quite a long time past my bedtime. But I really like going with the capsule route because you can really monitor like, okay, how much exactly do I need? And you don't overdo it and get the racing heart and the negative side effects. You've got enough to get you kind of up to the arousal level that you know you need, which is why I recommend all of this, practice it, right? We practice everything. You practice what techniques you're going to use. You practice your submissions. You do your cardio conditioning. You should also practice your nutrition and hydration for game day, because you don't want to experiment on game day. You never want to experiment on game day.
And does that include things like cutting as well? Because mm-hmm. obviously it's quite a stressful process, right? But if you're going to do that for the first time,
yes,
and it's before an important event, like maybe there is something that needs to happen in the planning too. So is that something that you recommend to maybe novice or beginning athletes to really go through this process before they compete?
Absolutely. And I'll try to get them to do it a month out. That way their body has ample time to recover from it. And with that practice cut, they're probably not going to be hitting their competition weight, but what I want them to experience is dropping X amount of weight. So let's say on competition, that 24-hour time, we're wanting them to drop 8 pounds. I want them to feel what it's like to drop 8 pounds. They may not get down to their 155-pound fight weight, but they'll go through the experience of dropping those 8 pounds. So when it's time to do it, they've already done it once. They know what's going to happen. They know initially the water load is going to cause an increase in weight, but it's going to come off. So it kind of helps to keep their anxiety down.
I can imagine that's a big one as well for the first time. When you start drinking loads of water, you're like, oh, God, I'm just like putting on kilos and kilos and all of a sudden. And you kind of got to like, you got to convince them that it's part of the process and it's all going to be fine. But I'm interested to hear as well what you do after the bout. So let's say you've not finished at midnight and you finish at a normal time of day. What's your refueling strategy like? Is it like, all right, okay, I've been really focused for an entire camp now. I'm going to go enjoy myself? Or is it like a really monitored, strict, right, okay, we're gonna go for the next one?
So I do always get ice cream. That's kind of my post tournament thing. I'm always gonna have ice cream, and we'll go out as a team and celebrate, but I won't go crazy, because the thing is that I've had a structured meal plan leading all the way up to the event, and if I decide I'm gonna go crazy and eat this big high fat high calorie meal, I'm gonna be miserable and my GI tract is going to rebel. So you don't have to go into detail. You can use your imagination.
No, please don't. It's it's graphic enough. Don't worry.
So what I recommend to the athletes is that, yes, go out and celebrate. You have accomplished your goal, but be mindful of how you celebrate, right? So if you've been eating literally chicken and rice the entire time, yeah, go out and eat a different kind of protein, eat a different carb, but you still want to be selecting leaner proteins, lean carbs, because your stomach literally can't handle the fat. And it can't handle a high volume of food yet, you know? And the thing is, this is one of the things that frustrates me the most when working with weight class athletes. Just because the bout is done, your season is not done. Jiu-jitsu is year round. MMA is year round. Boxing is year round. If you go and you do your match and then you balloon up 20 pounds, then we got to cut 20 pounds again. What you could do is be responsible and go back up maybe 10 pounds. And then your next water cut is going to be so much easier.
Yeah, I think that's some amazing advice, because the temptation mentally for me, I'm like, right, let's go burgers and beers right now. And that's probably not a good, I'm not a combat athlete, but yeah. I'm thinking, right, okay, that's going to be my quote unquote treat, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if that leads to a huge ballooning in weight and you've got to put that all back, that's a big, big effort. So,
well, and with the alcohol, you have to also think about the dehydration effect, because you just depleted your body. Rehydrated, now you're going to deplete it again, you know, 24 hours later. That's very stressful on the body.
And how much time after athletes then recovering? Because obviously it's not just the physical exertion, but there's the whole stress of that cut as well. So what kind of recovery do you then recommend, assuming they don't go out for beers, they're being
successful? So after like a big tournament or a big match, I recommend a week of active recovery. So, you know, don't go into the gym, don't lift, just take that time, be moving around, doing some mobility, stretching, things like that. But you got to let your body recover from any damage you took during the event, recover from the stress of the camp itself. Because, you know, if you go into a match and you're not somewhat injured, you didn't have a good camp, right? You're going to get injured. When you train for a combat sport, you're going to have little aches and pains. So you need to give your body time to recover from all of that before you get back and start ramping up for the next event.
Absolutely excellent. I think that's a really interesting insight. So Jem, massive thanks for your time and effort today. It's been a pleasure talking. Where can people find a little bit more about you and what you're up to?
So I am on Instagram at Dr. Jen Jitsu, and then on Facebook at Case Complete Nutrition and Fitness.
Excellent. So, Jen, massive thanks. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking again soon.
All right. Thank you.
And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to Jen for all of the hard work on today's podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you do at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science Sport Coach Academy. The Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you've enjoyed today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, all you have to do is click the link in the show notes and you can get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. What's more, every time you complete one of the courses, you'll get a certificate of completion to prove your ongoing education. And if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it'd be fantastic if you could recommend us to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing the best possible guests and best possible content. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks from me. I'm Matt Solomon for Science and Sport, and I'll speak to you next week.